Hello, welcome to Say That, the podcast where your big questions get real answers. My name is Matt King. I'm your host. Joining you here from the city of Chicago, and joining me here is Glenn Fitzgerald, the president of Mission USA.
Right on.
Also joining us here is Jed Brewer, the head of Mission USA Productions.
How's it going?
And joining us all the way from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, one of the pastors at Christ Community Church, Lee Younger.
Hello, folks. I just want to say at the outset that I am not well tonight, and I may or may not be medicated. Therefore, I'm not held responsible for anything I might say, unless it's really, really good.
Welcome to my world, Lee.
I'm medicated, too.
That sounds like, about to say, that sounds like a man who has a plan to say something horrible and is laying groundwork.
Which, by our standards, should be pretty good.
Fair point. All right, this week and for the foreseeable future, the Say That podcast has a little bit of a sponsor. It's us, but we'll explain this more at the end. But if you want to get some more stuff for your walk, if you want to support the ministry that Say That does and the ministry that we do on the ground here in Chicago, you can find out a way to do that at missionusa.com/bridgebox, and we'll give you some more info at the end. But for now, we'll get into the questions.
Wait, emergency! There's been an emergency.
Wait, emergency?
There's an emergency?
Yes. Tell us more.
I'm the only one not surprised by the emergency anymore.
This is a serious emergency. I was not aware of this. But apparently there is something out there, and I should, let's give some credit, because I don't know what the latest developments are out there. You know, I don't know.
So you don't have your finger on the pulse,
right?
As it were.
We have an intern that's young and a college student, and her name is Grace Abel, and she broke down DTR. You know the DTR?
Okay, yeah.
Define the relationship.
Yeah. She broke that down for me.
Someone told me that they had a DTR conversation, and I thought they meant with their doctor, but apparently that's a thing you say to other people.
Yeah. So she explained that there's something out there that's causing all kinds of problems, and that something is called soul ties.
Whoa.
Dun, dun, dun!
Now, I assume that's a neckwear company based in South Korea?
That was my first thought. My second thought was perhaps the kind of neckwear that James Brown might wear on stage.
So it'd be both flashy and very absorbent.
Right. Yeah. He could, you know, mop his brow with it. It turns out that, like, when you fall in love with someone and have a relationship and you date them, and then you break up with them.
Okay.
Oh. That's, you think you're broken up.
Right.
You think that you dated and then now you're not.
Right.
Well, guess what?
Okay, tell me.
You have a soul tie.
What?
Oh my God.
Your soul is tied to this person.
Stop
basically
it.
Forever.
Wow. That does not sound Christian in any way.
Well, you know what else it doesn't sound like? It's a big scary thing somebody made up to sell books. Good thing it's not that, or that'd be terrible.
Well, now you guys know that I'm a Cajun. You know, my mother's family.
Not a superstitious people.
And if you say soul ties to them, that sounds a whole lot something like where you light a candle and then you put a chicken's foot under your pillow and you get like some dirt.
Dime around your ankle.
Yeah, you know, you get some dirt from a graveyard and the whole thing, and then you break the soul tie.
Exactly right.
Right.
You know,
that actually makes more sense than the thing we're actually talking about.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It seems like people out there are freaking out because they're broken up. See.
Right.
But they figure I'm probably still tied to this person.
Totally.
So how do I deal with my soul tie?
Well, I just want to put it out there. Are you sure it's a soul tie? Or are you sure you don't have emotions?
Oh.
Well, that's yeah.
Because sometimes when something has happened and it feels like you're still tied to it, that's called having feelings about the thing that occurred.
Huh.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly common experience within the human race.
Whoa.
Oh. Well, we're learning things now.
I could be wrong. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe someone put a hex on you.
Right.
Maybe you have emotions.
Yes. And then you could deal with those emotions, move on.
Right.
And then you wouldn't have a soul tie.
Well, you see, guys, I've been to several mega churches. I've been to a lot of Christian bookstores. Heard a lot of stuff about soul ties. This whole handling your emotions like a grown-up. Never heard word one about that. So
yeah, that sounds,
I think it's clear which one of these is actually a thing.
Crazy, yeah.
Matt King is not a licensed counselor. He is a member of several 12-step programs.
Yes. Yes.
I wasn't before I moved here.
You know, and this is the interesting deal, and Jed can help us with this. What we found out is and I don't know if you want to splice it in there or how you want to let the people hear it, but I looked it up on the internets.
Okay.
Soul Ties,
is that worldwide, that internet?
Yeah. Oh. I thought at first it was local, but it's worldwide. And to look up, so like, what Bible verse is that?
Right.
Soul Ties. Right. You know. Right. And I couldn't find anything on that, but all I could find was this recording from the 60s. Mm. So,
viewers with sensitive ears may want to be seated.
So you broke up with your boyfriend, and now you feel like you've run out of soul. Come on, girl. It don't work like that. You feel like your soul is tied up. You feel like your soul needs to be set free. Well, you've come to the right place. Dr. Soul has the cure for you. Galatians 5, verse 1 says, it's for freedom that you are set free. Can you dig it, my babies? You were set free, you dig, so you can be free. If Jesus is in the picture, your soul is free. You ain't tied up. You ain't tied down, baby. It's free. That's the word from the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if we learn nothing else from that clip, Christian radio has changed a lot in the ensuing half century.
Yeah. And really not for the better.
No, that was pretty cool.
You can't have that guy introducing a Michael W. Smith song. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah, no,
the universe would implode on itself.
Friends are friends forever, girl.
Yeah, that doesn't work, you know.
See, that's a song about soul ties.
Yeah. That's insidious. That just all comes back
older
around
than we thought.
So do we feel like we've solved this emergency?
No, because I think it gets worse.
What?
Because we were hearing recently about soul sex.
On my blog, which I don't know if y'all are aware, this is actually quite popular.
It's extremely popular.
Yeah.
I like Jed as hype man.
I
am the Don King of Christian podcasts.
He's Jed's part of my entourage. Yeah. No,
I'm the one peeling off dollar bills when Glenn breaks things.
Yeah, exactly. No, what happened is on the blog, which is very popular, I was asked a question about someone had been told if you pray with someone that you're not married with and you pray as part of your relationship that you're having soul sex.
What?
Yes.
Stop it, dude.
No, yeah. I know. That was it. Dude.
Soul sex.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's when you got to blow the whistle and say, everyone out of the pool. We are not.
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
Wow.
We're not doing this anymore. You've all lost your minds.
Well, that's when the pastor should just lock the doors in the back of the sanctuary and say, no one's leaving the room until we've totally gotten this out of everyone's head.
Yeah, we've just got to have a return to sanity here.
Good night.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing I was trying to point out to this gal, you know, because they had struggles in their relationship, is
they had struggles praying with each other. You know, that was the struggle in their relationship.
Yeah, you know, just prayer is the thing that's helping it. People, you know, don't figure out a way to screw that up. You know, you can be legalistic about all different kind of things, but don't be legalistic in a way that's against prayer somehow. That's
dang, dude.
You've turned in on yourself, well, dude. You don't even know how to be legalistic.
I think you're forgetting though, Glenn, that prayer is a gateway spiritual discipline.
Oh,
it is a gateway spiritual discipline.
You start praying together. Next thing you know, you're worshiping together.
Yeah.
Out there serving the homeless together. Who do you think you are?
Hey, baby.
Save that stuff for home.
Hey, baby. You want to go on a silent retreat with me?
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Girl, I'm thinking you, me, and 40 days of fasting.
That is going to be a Kurt Cameron movie by the end of the month.
No, That's what I was asked about on the blog, is soul sex.
Come on, man.
You're praying together. You're having soul sex. I had to explain, and I felt funny explaining this, that you have to have a body to have sex with.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole point.
I don't know. Kesha has a new record out right now. She's talking about she had sex with a ghost and went on a spirit journey. I'm not making this up.
Well,
and here's the, but
and that's that not nearly as crazy as the thing that the person heard in church.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. But here's what I'm, the reason I bring it up is to say the soul ties and the soul sex thing, that's pagan spirituality.
Right.
Right.
Like going on a spirit journey and having sex with a ghost.
Right, right.
That doesn't have anything to do with Jesus or the Bible.
It's right. Also Kesha levels of nut job.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you're in the Venn diagram of your theology, if it overlaps with Kesha,
yeah.
Yeah.
You need to
yeah, we're done.
Put the brakes
yeah.
on there.
Yeah, yeah, that's not good. So this is what we need to focus on. You don't have soul ties. You're just sad.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Deal with the sad. That can be fixed. You cannot have sex with your soul.
No.
Your soul cannot be pregnant. I don't know. We got to cover all the bases
Wait, Glenn, are there STDs that your soul can get?
You cannot
get Oh, my
get
goodness.
Soul.
Wow. Younger took it over the top for once.
Yeah.
There are so many things I'm not saying right now.
You guys can't see, cause we Skype with Lee for this, and he said that and then just threw back NyQuil.
Yeah.
Just swigged it. All right, we've got
bad news, sir. It's soul gonorrhea.
I'm glad, Jed, that you said
Jed,
soul gonorrhea.
Jed cannot be talked on inappropriate.
In fairness, I was thinking it.
Yeah,
but I hung back because I thought there was a chance you'd go there.
Look, there was a good 45 seconds there where I was cycling through every STD I could think of,
and
that was the least offensive one I could come up with.
Yeah, and
it's a good, funny.
Hey,
I'm trying to hook you people up. Don't kill the messenger.
All right, we've got to stop talking about soul ties because my eye's twitching. Emergency off.
All right. Emergency off.
Now it's my job to transition from soul gonorrhea to questions that people actually had, and we're going to be spiritually helpful. Thank you once again, Jed.
That's awesome.
You're all welcome. I love you, my babies.
All right, our first question. Came into the Uncle Glenn blog, which I believe is quite popular.
I hear that.
Yeah. Comes from Chicken Tea Noodle Soup. Hey, Uncle Glenn, after putting on hazard vests, that's good. Securing my arse for laughing it off and yelling, gee ye Geronimo, I'm ready to ask a question. Okay. I have a friend who is a girl who's an agnostic because of issues relating to her religious friends being mean to her. When I was telling her that the church was good, I got a hint that she longs for that stuff too, and she actually wants to go to a good church. Any advice for her? P.S. Say that is outrageously popular here in the Philippines. You might become a Viscount.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, I felt like that was on the way, you know, some sort of honorary.
Well, you were hoping for a baronetcy, but.
Yeah, I would take a dukedom or just
a duchy.
You know, a duchy would be awesome.
I've always thought of you as the kind of fellow that rewards fealty with love and betrayal with vengeance. So I think it all works out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Glenn starts off here.
Yeah, and if you don't get some of his references there, you're going to have to go back and listen to some previous Say That podcast so you get all the inside humor there. It's a good question. I think we're going to see this a lot where people say, you know, I've got somebody's been burned by the church and she had a bad experience there. You know, I want her to go to my church and she might seem open to some good stuff. I think that's true for a whole lot of people out there. No question about it. Here's one thing I want you to think about, is to start kind of thinking outside the box on this. There's a tendency that we have nowadays to think of the church as a tool for evangelism.
Right.
To think of church is, if I get them to church, then the church will take it from there, so to speak, and that's the best way to start people on their spiritual journey. I don't think that's at all a good idea most of the time.
Amen.
And in a lot of cases, I think we need to think in terms of if you have a relationship with this gal and that's going well, and you're telling her stuff about Jesus and that's going well, so far, everything's perfect. That's all good. That doesn't need to be fixed yet at all. If you're telling her stuff and she's hearing you and she's moving forward with that, then ministry is taking place. That person is moving forward in their walk with the Lord. Everything's fantastic. I think if we thought of having her being plugged into the church at the end of that process, that would be ideal. If we can present the gospel to her, have her accept the Lord even before she starts going to church, and then bring her into the church within that context of this is these are all the other people who have made the same decision that you've made. In a lot of cases, that's going to be more healthy. And I'm saying that from the perspective of I'm used to working with guys at the jailhouse and working with them for, in some cases, weeks and months where you're developing that walk with the Lord. And there's no way to go to church until we get out and get out. And that works really well. So I want you to consider, the church should not be the beginning of that process or even the most essential part of that process. The second thing I'll mention real quick, and then I'll hand it off to these other guys, is a point that actually Jed made to me a while back about G.K. Chesterton, and he wrote a book a while back called Orthodoxy, and sort of the idea behind it, and Jed makes a good point on it, is that Chesterton, at the beginning of the book, kind of says that he, in essence, wanted to come up with his own religion, decided he was going to sit down and lay out all the tenets of a religion he really wanted to have. You know, he's going to make his own up. And when he was done, what he had was real Christianity, authentic biblical Christianity. And I think you'll see that a lot when you're trying to witness to people and talk to them about the Lord. A lot of what they want to believe in, a lot of what they wish Christianity would be, is actually pretty on target. So I think if you let it be that and let that relationship move forward in that context and then have church be somewhere at the end of that process, you'd be in much better shape.
Absolutely, Jed.
Sure. I think one thing I would just add into the discussion here for a friend is I've known a certain number of Christians, and I'm talking about some good people with good hearts here, who for some reason seem to feel like part of helping people come to know Jesus was that they needed to be an apologist for the church.
Right.
And let me define that word real quick. An apologist is someone who makes excuses for somebody else, who apologizes for somebody else. And the problem with that is, A, you don't need to do that,
right.
And B, if you look at the long history of the church, there's not any way to excuse
right.
a whole lot of it.
Right.
The truth is that Jesus is the person we're trying to introduce people to. They will become a part of the church by virtue of believing in Jesus. They'll become a part of the universal church. But the church as a group of people throughout history has done the most awful crap you could possibly imagine. And if you feel like part of evangelism is you need to find a way to make that okay, that's never going to happen.
No way.
The church has murdered people. The church has tortured people. The church has robbed people. The church has destroyed families, has destroyed countries, has spread disease intentionally. I mean, whatever the worst things you can imagine a group of people doing, the church, in the name of Jesus Christ, has done all of those things over the last 2,000 years. There's no, you will not be successful in apologizing for that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way around it. And in fact, the main thing that will happen is you will get sidetracked.
Right.
And that is the thing, that's the number one thing that kills ministry,
right.
is getting off on a rabbit trail.
Right.
Because again, at the end of the day, you're trying to get someone to get into a personal relationship with Jesus. You're not trying to get them to get into a personal relationship with the church.
Right.
That's those are two different things. Whenever we're trying to talk to people about Jesus, one of the things we want to be on guard against are rabbit trails or side issues. The what about question. What about abortion? And, you know, what about, you know, the Republicans? And, you know, what about the Crusades? And the thing that I'd encourage you to develop as a bit of an art form is being able to just shut that down. You say, what about the Crusades? It was awful crap. What can I tell you? I'm not on that. You know what? What about abortion? It's a terrible tragedy. What can I tell you? You know, let's talk about you and Jesus.
Right.
You know what? But if you feel like you've got to find a way to make the church a 100% good thing, it's just not going to happen. But the good news is that's not your job, and nobody is expecting you to do that. And what you may find in kind of a surprising way is that if your friend comes to you and says, "Well, religious people have been mean to me, and you know, and I don't know and whatnot," and if you say, "Dude, religious people are the meanest people I've ever met in my life.
Right.
And I tell you, Jesus had all kinds of problems with them." That will do more ministry than 100 hours of you trying to explain why the church is actually wonderful and lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the good news is your heart's in the right place. Just stop apologizing for the church. You don't need to do
that. Be on your friend's side, not on the church's side.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing about this question, and I love what these other brothers are saying. I'm going to come right in on the other side of that. You know, Jed saying, you know, Glenn saying, you're talking about evangelism. You don't need the church for that part. And Jed saying, in fact, the whole thing with the church is a side issue. We're just going to go with talking to her about Jesus because Jesus had problems with religious people. And the last step kind of in this progression of thought for me is, why don't you just be Jesus to her?
Amen.
Just love her like Jesus does. The Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5, he says, be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and a sacrifice to God. When it says be imitators of God, that word imitators, it's literally the Greek word mimic. It's where we get the word mimic in our English language. And he's just saying, just mimic Jesus. That's our thing. That's what Christians do. We mimic Jesus. So you love her when nobody else does. You care about her when nobody else does. When she's lonely, you're the first person that shows up with a pint of Ben and Jerry's and a DVD that you rented from Redbox. You know, you're the one that shows up and is the one that's loving on her. She's got problems with religious people. Who don't have problem with religious people? That's what I'm saying. We've all got problems with dang religious people, okay?
Amen.
But here's the thing is, you just be like Jesus to her, and even if she doesn't, and you don't have to say to her, by the way, I'm being like Jesus to you. You know, you just do it, and then the only piece I would add to it, which you don't even have to tell her about, is you'll see the Apostle Paul, which, by the way, the Apostle Paul is the most amazing and dynamic missionary in the history of the church. He got the whole thing started. This dude was amazing, and yet he writes to his friends, and he says, hey, guys, pray for me. Pray that when I go to these people, that God will open a door for the gospel. And then when he opens the door, pray that God will give me the courage to walk through that door and pray that I will know what words to say. Now, find some Christians that you do respect, that you do love, some people that are down at your own church that you're talking about, and just get them on your team. Just get them on your SWAT team and say, hey, there's a girl that I love that I'm going after, and I just want you to pray with me that God would give me an open door for the gospel, that I will have the courage to walk through it, and that God will give me words to say when the time is right. And until that happens, all you need to do is love on this girl. Just love her. Just imitate Jesus. Mimic Jesus. Be like Jesus to her.
Yeah, it's a very cool point. One thing I would add on to that I think Lee makes a very good point of, you say in your question, I'm trying to tell her that the church was good, and as we've all pointed out, that's really a non-starter of an argument. Now, there's a place to go where you can tell her that your church is good.
Right.
Sure. If you like your church and invite her to that, that's fine, but the capital C historical church, really not an argument you're going to win, so you might as well leave that alone. And nothing wrong, like we're saying, it's not bad to invite someone to your church if you love it, but the actual end goal here is not to get someone saved so that they go to church, it's to get someone saved so that they are saved.
Amen.
Jesus is the end goal, not the church. We're going to move on to our second question here. Came into our Tumblr inbox. It's from mynameiscolton.tumblr.com. It says, I'm a senior in college and in a fraternity. In the past, I've struggled with depression and alcoholism, but kept that to myself because I had built up a good reputation and didn't want it to get out. I grew up in a Christian home, but it wasn't until this January at a Christian conference that I made Christ the Lord of my life, and I finally found joy. I've been getting discipled, and I've really grown a heart for my fraternity brothers. How can I have an effect on my chapter with only 1 year to work with? Jed, can you kick us off here?
For sure. Well, first, Colton, welcome to the family,
bro. That's right.
Hello.
It's awesome to have you, man. And I really appreciate your question. And one of the things I would say is that I encourage you, fraternities can have a very tough reputation, but there are some really wonderful things about them, too. And one of the things that's wonderful is the guys that I knew that were fraternity brothers have have kept in touch after graduation way, way better than the folks who weren't. The school I went to, there was a Delta Chi chapter, and I knew a bunch of D Chi brothers, and they all know where each other are, and they all keep in touch. So one of the things I would look at is to say, you have 1 year left to work with in terms of being in campus, and I don't know what your living situation is, but if you're living in the house there, you know, you have 1 year left of that, but you don't have 1 year left of interaction with these guys. That can be an ongoing thing. So I think, you know, thing one is to maybe take the pressure off on that. I would say, if it's me, I would do what Jesus did, and I would focus on a couple of people.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus had 12 disciples, but if you read the Bible closely, what you see is that he had actually really three guys that he poured everything into, and those were Peter, James, and John. And that within that, he really had one key guy, and that was Peter. And so what I'd encourage you to do is to pick a couple of guys, one or two, and like Lee was just saying with the last question, focus on loving them. Just focus on being an example of Jesus's love to them. I mean, you and I both know that, you know, there's a lot of frat brothers out there that try and present themselves as tough and macho and this, that, and the other thing. But man, your frat brother's heart gets broken the same as anybody else's. That's how life works. And so that means being there for that brother in that moment when his girlfriend dumps him. It means being there for him in that moment when he doesn't get into the grad school that he wanted to go to. It means just loving on him. And that's all about planting seeds. Jesus talked a lot about planting seeds and helping people get ready to receive the gospel. And I think part of what's so cool about the fact that you are very likely to stay in touch with a lot of these guys is that the seeds you plant today, you can continue to water and help to grow over the years to come. You don't have to be in a rush to get somebody saved in your house this year. The one other thing that I'd add before I throw it around to these other brothers is I'd encourage you to not worry about trying to be the answer man. I think that can be a real struggle for young Christians, is feeling like they need to have the answer for everything. You don't. The truth is, nobody expects you to know everything about the Bible or God or Jesus or anything else. They'll test you on that. Mm-hmm. And the real thing they want to see in that moment is humility and vulnerability, for you to be willing to say, look, I don't know. And what you say in that moment is, I don't know, but here's the one thing I do know. And you always share with people the stuff that you know from your own walk. Yeah. If the only thing you know about God is that he loved you and he was there for you and nobody else was, then share that.
Right.
That's the only thing you need to worry about. Say, hey, I don't know about the beast with the 19 horns. I don't know anything about that. I know that Jesus loves me and he was there for me when nobody else was. And I know if he was there for me, he wants to be there for you. That's all I know.
Right.
We have a dude that's... you know, part of our team here is an amazing godly man and a fantastic preacher, and his name is Pete. And one of the decisions he's clearly made in his life is to preach based on only the things he knows from his own walk with Jesus. And because of that, his preaching is rock solid.
Yeah.
And there's an undeniable quality to it. And the truth is, that's how everyone should do ministry.
Yeah.
Is you should, whether it's preaching or talking or counseling or encouraging, just go with the stuff you know from your own walk.
And you should point out that Pete has a relatively little amount of preaching experience.
Sure.
But drops a bomb every time he preaches because he does that.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You don't need to be eloquent. You don't need to know a ton of Bible. Yeah. But if you're saying, look, dude, you know, in a quiet moment, you say, look, I was depressed. I hated my life. I was drinking all the time to drown out the fact I couldn't stand myself. Jesus came in that moment and said, I love you exactly as you are. That changed everything for me. Maybe that's funny to you. Maybe that's weird to you. I don't know. I don't care. It's real and it happened. I'm saying that's my story. No one's going to disrespect that.
That's right.
Ever. Right. No one's going to have a problem with that. And that's going to land in a way that all the Billy Grahams in the world can't, because that's you. That's your story. That's authentically you. So that would be my encouragement to you. Don't worry about being the answer man, and don't be in a rush. Pick a couple of people, love them the way Jesus has loved you, and let God cue you when it's the right time to get to the talking part of that equation.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Lee.
So I've got 2 points on this, and just to follow along with the last thing that Jeb was just saying, when he's saying looking for a couple of people, when you're trying to decide, well, how do I decide on those couple of people? You want to do what Jesus did there as well, which is you want to start with the lonely guy, or you want to start with the guy that's hurting. Like Jed said, you know, find the guy whose girlfriend just broke up with him, or guy that failed the test, or whatever the thing is.
you know, the guy whose parents just got divorced and he's brokenhearted about it, whatever that thing is, even, you know, a lot of times in kind of the fraternity culture, there's a kind of a facade that people put up, like Jed's saying, of I've got everything I need. I've got all the resources I need. I've got all the coolness I need. I've got everything. But here's the deal. Everybody has loneliness. The REM song was right. Everybody hurts sometimes. This is the thing. And you be on the lookout. You know, you be on the lookout for the guy that's hurting, for the guy that's lonely, for the guy that doesn't talk as much or around the house or whatever. And you make that guy your target guy. The second thing that I would point out is when a bunch of people are all partying, you know, doing that lifestyle thing together, and then one of the guys, you know, quote unquote, gets religion, you know, the thing that everybody is, the buzzkill for everybody is if that guy starts judging their sin. Man.
Yes.
So the second point that I would make before we kick it over is whatever you do, still be a good hang. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm talking about, don't compromise on what the Lord is asking you to do in any way. You know, submit to him in every way that you feel that he's asking you to, as far as your own personal walk and your own personal behavior and all that kind of stuff. But don't be ragging on anybody. Don't be judging on anybody. Don't hold non-Christians to some kind of standard of Christian living. Because don't expect guys that don't walk with Jesus to all of a sudden feel like, it's, you know, that they shouldn't be players, that they shouldn't be drinking, that they shouldn't be partying and all that kind of stuff. So do not become the sin police. Okay. So look for that hurting guy and do not become the sin police. That's a way to kill that thing real quick.
Amen.
Yeah. One thing I would, before we throw this one, I would jump in real quick on one of the last things Lee said there. That whole simply's thing is an attitudinal thing more than what you're doing. Like, you talk about alcoholism and the question, world difference between I'm not coming to this party because you're all a bunch of dirty sinners and I'm not coming to this party because not a good environment for me. But that's more in the presentation than the thing. Glenn?
Yeah, I agree, especially with all this, especially what Jeff was saying about, you know, leaving that legacy and what do you want to do there, and thinking in terms of multiplying yourself through another individual. Yeah. So that really, if you're going to do that, you need to be willing and to focus in on a smaller number of guys and really get a depth of relationship going. And that's a very valid way of going about ministry. You know, numbers is a concern for people who aren't looking to do long-term discipleship-based ministry. If you want to really leave something solid behind, think of multiplying yourself. Who can take that a baton and continue to run with it. Second thing I would mention is servanthood. We talk about that all the time in terms of a way of building credibility, earning the right to be heard. And there's a thousand ways to serve those brothers in that house. You know, maybe that's finals week and everybody's studying and doesn't have time to go out and get something to eat, and you make a big pot of chili. You know, maybe it's, you know, offering to do this guy's laundry when you know he's got studying going on and he doesn't have time for it, or whatever those things. It could be any little thing, but looking to serve other people and finding a way to help them without judging them always helps. And then the last thing I'd mention is community. Here's the thing. If you join a fraternity, you're looking for brotherhood, friendship, connections.
Which is cool.
Which is cool. There's nothing wrong with that. The fraternity may be pretty decent at some elements of that and pretty crappy at other ways of doing that. If you are looking for getting a lot of cool friendships and brotherhoods, and what you have are a bunch of shallow male relationships and a lot of drinking and partying, then you probably still haven't gotten what you're looking for. Who knows? But one way or another, there's probably some holes in that you can look to fill and to say, you know, the fraternity's good at X, but I want to pick up where that leaves off and take us the rest of the way. And that's a big part of what Christianity is all about, becoming part of a family, becoming part of something larger than yourself.
Absolutely. One more thing, Jed?
Yeah, just real quick. I love what both Glenn and Lee and Matt have all said. Lee was talking about, you know, you need to be a good hang. And I know particularly when you've been in a culture, which I'm going to guess is what you've been in, that's just dominated by alcohol. And then you reach a point where you say both, you know, in terms of me and Jesus, I'm not sure I want to be drinking. But also in terms of just I struggle with alcoholism. I need to not be doing that. I think it could be a little overwhelming to think of how would I even begin to be a good hang? Well, I'll tell you two things on that. One is I'd encourage you to pray about letting some more mature guys within the fraternity know that you struggle with alcoholism, and that's why you're abstaining from drinking, and that's why you may not be at certain events. Anybody who's going to have a problem with that is someone that you don't need to be hanging with, just period. But I think what you're likely to find, particularly if you're talking to, you know, some more mature dudes, is they'll say, hey, we got your back, you know, totally, you know, support you in that. But then that means being very creative and finding ways to continue to hang out. And so maybe that's, you know, you know, you make sure that, you know, there's a Madden 2012 night, you know, and get some guys together and, you know, go at it, you know, and maybe that means, you know, when they're all, you know, bombed out of their gourd and whatnot, you're the guy that drives everybody to Krispy Kreme at 4 a.m, you know, you know, maybe that means, you know, doing some more active stuff, you know, getting, you know, a running group going, you know, from the frat, but really engage your creativity there. You know, yeah. You know, I think if people sense from you, look, I can't do this anymore because it's destroying my life. I just I can't, that element, again, very few people are going to have any problem with that at all. But if they sense, I can't do that, but I love you and I care about you, and here are other things I'd like to do together so we can have that fellowship, they will be all about that. I think you'll find that in the main they'll receive that really well and be really supportive.
Yeah.
One thing I would add real quick to all this, going back to this end of your question about how do I do this with only 1 year to work with, I think all four of us can attest to the fact that if people know that you are down for the Lord and if you do your best to win that out, people from your past will come find you when they're ready to do something for that.
Yeah.
So you're very well served to spend your time just kind of building that life and that reputation solidly rather than working against that clock, because like Jed said, if you have like an alumni network that you're likely to stay in these guys' lives with, but even not, a lot of people live very secular lives. The person they ran into in their frat or the club in high school, whatever, is just the only Christian they really know.
Yeah.
So when they hit a rough point or streaking something, you'll be the guy they come to, and that's a very advantageous place to do ministry from. So we're going to go to our last question here. It came in anonymously to our Tumblr inbox. He says, I have a friend, a brother in Christ, who is currently attending medical school in a different state. He is interested in a girl from his hometown, but they live hundreds of miles away from each other. What are your thoughts on starting to date with a long-distance relationship? How would you advise him? Essentially, they would see each other a few times a year at most. Lee, can you start us off here?
Sure, and I got to be perfectly honest and say, I don't really know. I mean, I don't feel like I have enough information to be able to give this person, you know, some advice on what to do. I mean, here's the deal. I will say a couple things, you know, a couple things from my own experience. One is that the world is not as distant as it used to be. The world's not what it used to be. Distance isn't as distant as it used to be. There's, you know, when I was in college, I didn't know very many people that had cell phones. And we didn't have... there was no Skype. There was no anything like that. I mean, the world has changed. I mean, my in-laws live in China. And when Christy and I first started dating, we couldn't talk to them. I mean, she couldn't talk to her parents very often at all because it was so expensive to call. Now we can Skype for free every night if we want to. I mean, they can see their grandkids on the computer whenever they want to. So the first thing I would say is that the world has changed. Distant is not the way it used to be. The second thing that I would say is that I have done a long distance dating relationship before. My wife and I went to two different universities, and it freaking sucks. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't advise anybody to do it if you are what this person says is interested in a girl from your hometown. Interested in a girl from your hometown is the kind of thing that you would start kind of a casual dating relationship. Let's hang out, go get some ice cream. But if dating long distance, that's like when you are, you're pretty settled that this is your gal. And you're willing to wade through some crap.
to see it through to the other side. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't have enough information to tell you whether or not you should, whether or not your friend should enter into this thing. But I don't know. I mean, if it's just your friend is interested in a girl from his hometown, I wouldn't advise it.
I don't know about you folks, but the fact that Lee started his question with "I'm going to be honest" makes me very suspicious of all his other answers.
Yeah.
I told you I was medicated when we started this thing.
Not helping the suspicion, Lee. I'm just saying. Glenn?
Yeah, my marriage with my wife is a product of a long distance relationship. That long distance relationship did not last long. We knew it wasn't going to last long. We got in the same town in a hurry and got ourselves married and all that. So it can work. There's no question about that. It's true that there were some elements about that that actually helped us a lot. The fact that there wasn't physical temptation made that part easy. It forced us to talk. It turns out, I think if we were both in the same town, we'd be mostly making out and making cow eyes at each other and never talking. And when you're long distance,
wait, are you saying that you have physical desires?
Yeah.
Eye ties.
Yeah. You know, but we, you know, the distance forced us to do talking, and that turned out to help us a great deal. We talked a whole lot about our future together and what we wanted to do. There's a lot of strategy and a lot of planning that went into that. And that, I think that helped a ton. So in some instances, that distance can absolutely help. I think part of what your friend is looking at is something we've seen over and over again in our own lives and in helping other people in their lives. The toughest thing about a romantic situation and romantic choices about romantic dating is when it's so close and yet so far. By the time you get to my advanced geriatric age, you look back on your life and you realize I met a number of gals that I could have fallen in love with and married and never been happy.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been able to be good roommates, right. Let alone good marriage partners. We were just not compatible in that sense. So you realize that that same thing applies for dating, that this could be the perfect person to date, but the setup is just so awful. That's not going to allow for good success. I think you deserve to, by and large, to have physical interaction and be present with one another physically as much as possible in your dating relationship. And I hate to see people kind of cheat themselves out of that, particularly before they get started and particularly across a 4-year gap. But last thing I'll point out, if you do start that relationship under what are clearly suboptimal conditions, I can tell you the problems that you have long distance are the same problems you would have short distance. Yeah. So that you can't make excuses for it that way. And we've seen that play out in the past as well.
Absolutely. Jed?
Well, look, I think to read between the lines here, I think you want some rules for how to date successfully. And here's the problem is there aren't any. This Christian life, man, it's your life. You've got to live it. There are some boundary lines. I mean, if you're saying, here's a woman I'm not married to, should I have sex with her? The answer is no. Here's a big pile of cocaine. Should I use it? The answer is no.
Thank you for the term, use it.
Should I partake of it? Should I take this razor blade and cut lines? Never mind. But the truth is, those kind of very, very firm boundaries are actually relatively few and far between. Most of this Christian life is about figuring out what's the Lord calling you to do in your unique situation, right? So there are some people where the Lord is absolutely calling them to be in a long-distance relationship. There are some people where the Lord is absolutely not calling them to be in a relationship, and that's life. That's how the Christian life works. I think the thing I would encourage you to do, or really your friend, I should say, and the thing I'd encourage your friend to do is to think about what your goals are for this relationship. like, kind of like Lee is saying, if this is something where the two of you know each other and you know you want to be together and you know you want to get married and that's what this is and we're just, you know, trying to figure it out, well, then, you know, you know, love bears all things. I mean, you know, you figure it out. If this is an exploratory thing where, you know, we think maybe we're interested in each other, maybe we want to, you know, give that a whirl and see what happens, that's okay. But I think it's a matter of adjusting your expectations and saying, if it's an exploratory thing, then we want to give ourselves permission to hit eject on this at some point. You know, if we start dating and we're talking and whatnot, whereas it's not working and it's, you know, it's more trouble than it's worth and whatnot, it's okay to, say, you know what, it's been lovely, but I think we need to hit the brakes here. What we can't give you, and I think it's probably what you'd like, again, is we can't give you rules that will guarantee success here. That,
right.
Those just don't exist, you know. And I think, in fairness to you, I think Christian culture has given you a bunch of faulty ideas about dating where you'd be looking for rules. It's okay, and this is really, really important. It's okay to begin a long-distance dating relationship, do it for a week, a month, whatever, and say, you know what, it was lovely, but it's time for us to do other things and move on. You don't have soul ties, you know. You haven't
full circle.
You haven't given each other a piece of your heart you can never get back. You know, you tried something. Maybe there were some good times in there. It was what it was. But nobody can give you a prescription that guarantees success. You know, I mean, you know, dating is about taking on risk. You know, dating is about trying things, and it's because there's another person involved, you are not in complete control of this situation. That's you know, that's the way it works. So I think it's about seeking some wisdom and discernment and calling from the Lord, and then taking it day by day and trusting him within
that.
Absolutely. All right. If you have a question for us, you can get us at saythatpodcast@gmail.com or right into our Tumblr inbox at thebridgechicago.tumblr.com. And once again, we want to mention, if you want to support the ministry that Say That does, that we do up here at The Bridge, we have a new way you can do that. You can go to missionusa.com/bridgebox and sign up for our Bridgebox service. And the way that works is, we'll give you a little short overview. Basically, it's $8 a month. And for that, every month, the first of every month, you'll get an email in your inbox with a link to your Bridge Box, which contains a live worship song that Jed wrote, recorded live at the Bridge, and two other versions of that song. It involves a Glenn sermon, a four-week formatted Bible study. It involves some extra writings. It involves a guest song every month. Lee has done one. Our friend Nino, also from Lee's church, has done another. Basically, a lot of cool stuff that we've developed to do our ministry on the ground with ex-gangbangers, ex-addicts, guys coming out of prison. It's honed for that kind of extreme environment. But what we found, what Glenn and Jed have found doing this ministry for a long time, is that it works for every situation. It works for every environment.
That's right.
If you want something to kickstart your own walk, if you run a small group and you need material for that, we give you basically everything you need to run your Sunday school class or Bible study for 4 weeks with video, audio, and extra goodies. All that for less than it costs for two cups of coffee at Starbucks. All that money, 100% of that money, goes to support our frontline missions so we can kind of fill out our budget and maybe even hire some new folks on. So if you're interested in that, that's missionusa.com/bridgebox. Just remember, we love you. God loves you. There's nothing you can do about it.
So you broke up with your boyfriend, and now you feel like you've run out of salt. Come on, girl. It don't work like that. You feel like your soul is tied up. You feel like your soul needs to be set free. Well, you've come to the right place. Dr. Soul has the cure for you. Galatians 5, verse 1 says, it's for freedom that you are set free. Can you dig it, my babies? Were set free, you dig, so you can be free. If Jesus is in the picture, your soul is free. You ain't tied up, you ain't tied down, baby. It's free. That's the word from the doctor.